This is Hush of the Battle Weary, a The Hobbit fanfic written by Etheray and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated R and is gen, with additional tags for Alternate Universe Canon Divergence, Alternate Universe Everyone Lives, War, Trauma, Muteness, Sign Language. Author's Notes. Written for this prompt on the Hobbit kink meme. Keeley won't or can't talk after the Battle of Five Armies, and no one can figure out why. While everyone else is trying to encourage him to talk, Biffer is happy to keep Keeley in silent company and teach him some basic signs to communicate. Warning. Contains themes of war-related violence and psychological trauma. Sometimes he worries that he will never get the sounds of battle out of his ears. They follow him. The sharp clanging of swords as shovels shatter rock. The flight of endless arrows and the ropes slithering through their hooks. The roar of a charge and a dislodged boulder being rolled down a slope. Dwarves mine like they make war. Or perhaps they think of war as just another mine. The battle cries are indistinguishable. Keeley is tempted, more than once, to take a blade to his own ears. But Thorin and Feely worry enough as it is, and he has enough sense left to know that this torment resides elsewhere. Oyan says that you're fit to go walking about as long as you don't overdo it, Feely is saying, occupied with the contents of the trunk at the foot of Keeley's bed. They'd had to share one as children, Keeley remembers. It had been a plain wooden affair, built by their father. Not like this grand old heirloom of metal and jewels, which had come with the enormous room and the ancient bed and the noisome, trouble-ridden mountain and all its unending clamor. The entirety of Keeley's worldly possessions barely fills up one corner of the trunk. Dwalin says you ought to avoid going into the mines, though, continues Feely, acting as if he neither wants nor expects a response from Keeley. It is unusual for a room being occupied by the both of them to be so quiet. Feely is visibly discomforted by it, despite a lifetime of complaining about Keeley's tireless prattle, and is clearly attempting to fill the void. It's just for now. Everything is a mess down there. No one knows how much damage the dragon has inflicted on the foundations, and if something were to happen... Feely shrugs awkwardly. Keeley nods, lips tightening. Neither of them need to point out the obvious. Keeley wouldn't be able to shout for help. Not that this would usually be a problem. The mines nurture a ceaseless rhythmic storm that ranges from picks chipping away at stone to enormous, many-armed mechanisms gouging whole tunnels into the rock, and it is not uncommon for a dwarf to not be able to hear the voice of the dwarf right next to them. It is why the hand signals have been devised. Keeley suspects that someone who is not the nephew of the new king under the mountain would have been herded down below as soon as he was hale enough to carry a few tools. His fingers fold and unfold in the broad shapes of Iglesmik. The sorry few that he remembers, anyway. Outside. Go. Fortunately, Feely has never needed much help to understand Keeley. An uncertain expression crosses Feely's face, but he doesn't raise any objections. To the thrush's door? And that is what they've taken to calling the secret door that they'd used to enter the mountain while Smaug was in residence. The actual door had been heavily damaged by Smaug, but the ensuing rockfall had created a new shelf that the dwarves had cleared out enough for one or two to be able to sit by the mountainside. Feely's fingers are clumsier than Keeley's, less used to delicate movements. Not that Iglesmik is particularly delicate, or so Keeley had always thought. Me, no death, Keeley signs irritably. Stop signing, no need. Feely just gives him an exasperated look. As if I've ever left you to do something on your own. Keely ducks his head, breath stuttering. Finally, he gripes. You butcher signs. Feely chuckles. No worse than you, or have you forgotten that we learned it together? If it offends you so much, hurry up and speak then. Something heavy and eye-sharp drops into Keely's stomach. He's heading for the door before he's even aware of moving. There's a burst of footsteps behind him, but then Feely's hand is heavy on his shoulder, stopping him in his tracks. I'm sorry, says Feely hurriedly, sounding panicked. I spoke without thinking. Fine. Keely doesn't know if Feely can even see his hands. But Feely wouldn't need to. Feely can read the tension in his shoulders, and the cant of his head, and the harshness of his breath. Feely knows every part of him, all his life. Feely knows his proudest moments and worst fears, knows to the second how long it takes for Keely's heart to forgive. Fine, he repeats. It dawns on Keely that this is the first time there is something about his younger brother that Feely doesn't entirely understand. No, it's not. Can you look at me? Please? Keely turns around. I want to hear you talking again. Feely speaks, signs. His fingers tangle and confuse the forms, so rushed that Keely wouldn't have had a hope of following them if he had nothing else to go on. Of course I do, but only when you're ready, and if you never do, that's fine too. I'll knock down anybody who gives you grief over it. You're my brother, and I'll take you any way you are. Do you believe me? Face warm, and a particular heat building behind his eyes, Keely nods. He gives Feely a reassuring slap on the arm, and then flees his room. He has absolutely no desire for company, for the well-meant press of another person's concern and attempted cheer, and, worst of all, the unsaid words buzzing thick in the air and out of reach for him. So he almost turns around when he sees someone's shadow on the pass. But then he recognizes the dwarf's silhouette and keeps on walking. Biffer gives him a nod of greeting. Keely opens his mouth to ask, "May I join you?" But the only thing that comes out is air. He clenches his fingers in frustration, even as his stomach roils and his heart pounds louder in his chest, like a battle hammer swinging at bone shields. A gentle touch on his arm draws him back. Biffer pats the ground next to him invitingly. Keely nods his thanks and sits down. They watch the landscape for a long while. Keely wonders if this is something Biffer does often, if he's intruding in a pocket of peace that the dwarf has taken for himself. Biffer is wearing a miner's belt, with the usual complement of tools stuck through various hoops and sturdy pouches. Keely has heard that everyone has been pitching in to repair the most important holes, regardless of rank or trade. A sharp, sonorous noise rings out from somewhere. The front gate, most likely, where there is a promisingly steady stream of supplies coming in, and the first batches of worked metal goods flowing out. Keely winces, shaking his head. Biffer's hands fly through the air, while his voice simultaneously grunts out the words in Kuzdul for, "People are noisy." "Yes," Keely signs in response. He hesitates. "Don't know." He tries to copy the sign that Biffer had just made. "Noise?" Biffer does it again, slow enough for Keely to follow, and nods when Keely does it correctly. Then he tilts his head to one side, peering down with a critical expression. He gently pushes Keely's hands further apart. A tap to the elbow brings Keely's left arm up, and a hand on Keely's right shoulder adjusts the way Keely holds his right arm. It feels not unlike Keely's first lessons on the bow. Thorin had been much more exacting. Biffer signs a word, this time without talking, and clearly expects Keely to imitate him. Keely resists the urge to roll his eyes.
Keely,
he adds. No name. He receives a very unimpressed look. Biffer's hands chop out a phrase that Keely doesn't know, though he's fairly certain he sees the sign for puppy somewhere in it. Keely, repeats Biffer. Son of Dis, daughter of Thrain, son of Thror. Keely signs the words, or tries to, but he's barely finished his own name when Biffer slaps at his hands. Slowly! The next hour is spent on Keely relearning his basic signs, with frequent corrections by Biffer. The dwarf seems determined to improve Keely's execution and form, not satisfied with the bare minimum that Balin had let Keely get away with in his childhood lessons. Eventually, Biffer motions that he needs to return to work. Keely nods, clasps his hand together for an overly exuberant thank you. The distraction has left him feeling easier than he has in many days. Despite his earlier desire for some peace and space, Keely has never been one for total solitude, and the dwarf's company had been exactly what he'd needed. Biffer claps him on the shoulder. You did well. He wags a finger in Keely's face. But you must practice. The dwarf has never been the warmest of the company. Yet, Keely thinks he can see something of Jolly Bofur and generous Bomber in his eyes. That same good humor, tempted by many trials and all the more resilient for them. Keely nods, surprising himself with his own willingness. It would be something to do, he thinks. And more than anybody's asked of him of late. In the days following that first lesson, Keely finds himself keeping company with Biffer more and more often. Feely blinks in surprise the first time he sees them wandering the main halls together. Bofur, on the other hand, looks as if he understands without any explanation needed, smiling and patting Keely warmly on the back. The lessons are always by the Thrush's Door, however. It's the quietest place on the mountain that's less than an hour's walk, and they're not likely to be disturbed. I heard there was... Keely's hands falter, not knowing how to express cave-in. Cave-fall? Good try, lad. Biffer gives him an approving nod. But that one's for underground landslide. Keely has gotten used to the way Biffer sometimes switches between Iglishmech and Kuzdul. He hardly notices it now. The older dwarf shows Keely the correct sign for cave-in and waits for Keely to copy it. Feely was all covered in dust, Keely tells Biffer with a snort. I saw him, Biffer replies. He started pulling miners out at the moment the alarm went up and wouldn't leave until everyone was clear. Keely looks down, jaw muscles tense. He didn't tell me that. Some of the helplessness screaming under his skin must show in his hands or his face. Or maybe Biffer simply knows. A callous rough hand closes over Keely's. Biffer waits until Keely looks up before signing. You gave us all a scare, lad. Both of you did. I don't blame Thorin for his over-attention. He cannot keep the both of you locked away, so you're taking your brother's share. Kili had been one of the last dwarves to be recovered from the battlefields. He might not have been found at all, at least not in time, had a hobbit's keen eyes not spotted the tip of one boot sticking out beneath a veritable mountain of the enemy dead. I don't know if it's such a great deal as all that, when so many have died fighting so valiantly. A bewildered Bilbo had attempted to explain in his first visit after Kili woke up. Not meaning, of course, that I'm not glad to have found you, Kili, for I count that to be an even greater contribution to this entire business than bandying a few words with a dragon. But if you must know, shoes are such peculiar things to a hobbit, and I couldn't help but take note of all of yours during the long journey. There's often not much else to look at, after all. When we were climbing or going up a steep hill, shoes were all I could see of the dwarf in front of me. Sometimes I got a closer look than I wanted. I've become very well acquainted with Beaufort's back heels, for instance. Anyway, the moment I saw your boot, I knew it to be dwarf-made, and when I freed it as far as I could, I recognized it to be yours. A bird's shadow passes by overhead. Kili looks up to see a raven diving low and disappearing around the side of the mountain. He wonders if it bears a message for Thorin, if Fili is at Thorin's side, if Thorin will invite Fili's counsel. Your brother was nearly drained of blood, continues Biffer. His skin was death pale, and his hair looked nearly as dark as yours. It was so thick with blood. Kili breathes in sharply. His hands shake, even as he admits, I didn't know. They told me that he was asleep for a long while and wouldn't respond to anything. It had taken weeks to get the stench of death out of his nose. We couldn't find you. Biffer punctuates the U sign with a fierce stabbing motion. Everyone assumed you dead. Many thought that Fili knew somehow, and was only lingering a while before following you to the Thayer halls. Biffer levels Kili with an intent, somber gaze. Can you imagine, lad? Thorin, waking up, grievously injured himself. To be told that he'd lost the both of you? Such grief. I had never seen the like of it, and never wished to see it again. At least he got his Arkenstone back, snaps Kili, fingers moving too sharply for politeness. Is that what you've heard? True, I grant it. Bard himself came to Thorin and returned the Arkenstone, as thanks for the food and supplies and a show of goodwill. Biffer's face twists into an unsettled expression. Thorin could barely look at it. He wouldn't even touch the jewel. Kili blinks, surprised. Then who took it? Master Baggins, of course, Biffer chuckles. I've never seen anybody so unhappy to be handed the heart of the mountain. The next day, Kili tentatively asks, Do you remember much of it? The battle? When Kili nods, Biffer replies, No, not much. When I fight, it is as if someone else is doing it. It has been like that since. Biffer flicks his eyes up to his own brow. Beaufort likes to say that the axe is the one doing the fighting. None of us thought I'd ever learn to fight, see? How did you get it, if I might ask? Biffer's smile is wry. I didn't learn fast enough. For a moment, his eyes turn distant. That's why I don't like battles much. What happens after? I remember better. They're quiet for a long moment, until Biffer says, hands gentle, "You remember it, then?" Keely remembers the first silence. For a second, for an hour, time shock frozen. Before the numbness receded and gave way to pain. He remembers the great weight on his chest, the inexorable downward push pinning him immobile. The agony of each breath, the struggle to draw lungful after lungful of fetid, death-drenched air. The scream that tore out of him when he could bear it no longer, and then finding himself unable to stop, sound after ragged sound spilling out until the world heaved around him. He thought, for a moment, that he'd been found. Feely had heard him, and Feely had come, and Feely had lived. And then the crushing pressure grew worse, and he managed one last full breath before a thick fluid, blood and worse, gushed down into his eyes and nose and gaping mouth. "Yes," is the entirety of Keely's reply. The others still look painfully expectant when they encounter Keely. They still appear disheartened when he gestures or signs instead of opening his mouth to reply to their questions. Thorin and Feely are still the hardest to disappoint. But the helpful suggestions and well-meant reassurances grow less. If the rest of the company notice his growing proficiency with Eaglishmech, they keep their thoughts on it to themselves. Keely finds himself being recruited by Balin to help with the inventory of weapons and mining tools, which somehow involves advanced lessons on penmanship. And then he's practicing signing with Ori and teaching him some of the more obscure forms. It's Bilbo whom he'd have the most difficulty communicating with, or so Keely expects. But Biffer and Keely encounter Bilbo on their way to their usual mountainside refuge, with the hobbit going the other way. And when Bilbo looks confused at Keely's uncharacteristic recalcitrance, Biffer explains Keely's worries in his usual manner. That is, in a language and hand sign that the hobbit could have no hope of understanding. And yet, Bilbo doesn't look confused at all. The hobbit smiles warmly at Keely and says, "Well, I've gotten along well with Master Biffer so far. I expect you and I will be able to muddle along just fine." Later, after dinner, Thorin stares for a second too long when Bilbo signs, "Thank you," to Keely for passing the bread. Then the king gives a short, sharp nod. If there are any objections from the more conservative dwarves new come to the mountain, Keely doesn't hear of them. The most direct acknowledgement comes from Feely, who starts, fingers stumbling, "You lots better," and finishes in his voice, sheepish, "Won't ever be as good as you, I'm afraid." "That would only matter," replies Keely, "to them as can't understand me without." He looks his brother in the eye. "You and I, when have we ever needed words?" The days are grown short, and the hour of that particular day grown quite late, when Keely kicks his leg out over the cliff and manages to ask, "Don't you ever wish?" Before his nerves fail him, though he keeps his fingers hanging in the air, signaling an open question. Biffer reaches up and traces a finger over the axe piece embedded in his hand. "Sometimes," he admits. "A lot, in the beginning. But many dwarves died the day I got this. A lot of deep songs ended, as my ma used to say. Mine should have too, by all rights." Biffer shrugs. "So what if I lost a few words?" He gives Keely a meaningful look. There are always other ways, lad. And you have a brother who will follow you anywhere. Never forget that. Their hands settle, letting the air grow quiet between them. From their familiar perch on the side of the mountain, the two dwarves watch the night draw its glittering cloak over the wide sky. At their backs, the mountain continues bustling and vital, labored and loved, and resoundingly alive once more. The end. Reader's notes. I found myself making a couple of the signs from ASL that I still remember from, like, high school while I was reading this. So, like, thank you, and family, and son, and brother, and I knew those signs, so I was doing those sort of in the background as I was reading it. I don't know if that actually helps the podfic any, but yeah. If you could watch me, you would know how many I also got wrong in the meantime. Anyway. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and have a nice day.